Hi, it's Dave. And when we founded Galactic Netcasts back in 2011, we did it not to make money or become the most popular podcast network on the planet. We did it first to get together with friends to share our love of all things geeky like aliens and sci-fi. Of course, we've since broadened that out to include things like comic books, the paranormal, video games, board games, horror, science, and other topics. And over the years, we've never really asked you to do more than subscribe and maybe share our stuff with friends of yours who may like it too. And we've hardly ever came out and asked you directly for any kind of financial support until now. And we're not asking you to make a huge commitment or even something like Netflix, which is like $8 a month. But if you like what we do, please consider pledging at least $1 a month to help us cover operational costs like web and audio hosting. And maybe sometime in the future, we'll have enough in the budget for some advertising. Who knows? A bunch of people giving $1 a month can add up pretty quickly. For us, just you listening is good enough. But if you want to do more, go to patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. Again, that's Patreon, patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. Check out our rewards, and you might decide to commit to more than $1 a month. Either way, we thank you. And now, without further ado, here's your podcast. And of course, as always, a production of Galactic Netcasts.
This is Alpha Geek Radio. Visit tunein.alphageekradio.com to learn more.
The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
Attention, Galactic Collective. The Sci-Fi Geeks Club is next. Please stand by.
You can take part in the podcasts by providing feedback. Send a message to galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Call the voicemail number at 805-328-3966 or leave an audio message directly on our website, galacticnetcasts.com. We also invite you to join the Galactic Collective. All the information and links can be found at gncasts.com/galacticcollective. That's gncasts.com/galacticcollective. Now, without further ado, hear ye, hear ye! Another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club is officially called to order!
Hello and welcome to another production of Galactic Netcasts. I'm Dave Nelson along with my co-host Brad Ludwig. Hello, Brad.
Hello, Dave.
Joining us also on the host panel, the original lineup from episode one. We have Anessa Moyens and Matt Stein. Hey, guys.
Howdy.
OG.
Is that OG or like original gangsta?
You know, I'm very impressed that you knew that OG was original gangster, Brad.
Back in my day.
You guys are way too hip for me. I'm going to just continue on with my script here and everything's fine. Also here is someone who won the chance to be on this episode. That's weird. Through our Patreon campaign. She is an American-born, Amsterdam-based freelance food, tourism, and tech writer, an amateur sci-fi writer, and sci-fi is in her blood and bones. Yeah. She got the whole geek thing from her science fiction-loving parents. Please welcome to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Alicia Branner. Alicia, hey!
Hey! Yay!
So, what time is it there right now in Amsterdam?
Now it's about 4 a.m.
Oh,
good Lord.
Do you hear the roosters crowing out there?
Yeah, we keep them in the country so they don't wake us up.
Great idea.
Well, thanks for giving or pledging to our Patreon campaign. We really appreciate that, and it's a great honor to have you on the show.
Yeah, it's a great honor to be here. I started watching this show because last time that Andy Weir was on, that's how I discovered you guys.
Whoa, so. That's awesome.
Cool.
Okay.
Yay.
Cool. Well, we're doing good work here, I think. Okay, so without further ado, our guest this week is someone we've had on the podcast before, but there's been a lot going on in his life since we had him on last.
A little bit.
He's a former employee of Blizzard, who most recently wrote a little book that we like to call The Martian. I think he likes to call it as well, which got turned into a motion picture directed by Ridley Scott and starring an up-and-comer by the name of Matt Damon. Have you guys heard of Matt Damon?
Things are looking up for him, I think.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Andy Weir!
Hey!
Andy, what's
been... Playing Muppet arms!
Andy, what's been going on since we talked to you last? Tell us, catch us up on things.
Not much. There's really nothing going on in my life. What's new with you?
Well, we've done a few more episodes of this podcast since you were on last.
Excellent. The movie, it's completely taken over my life. I haven't written a word in a couple of months because the marketing campaign for it, just constant events, interviews and stuff, just like nonstop.
Well, it's cool that you took time to talk with us. We really appreciate that.
Yeah, we're incredibly honored that you took the time to the day before the movie comes out to be on our little podcast.
Oh, well, you know, there we go.
Dave, you made sure that his check isn't going to bounce, right?
Yeah.
Wait, there was money?
And I think
that's
there
what
was,
I'm saying.
There was
I
some,
mean,
the,
no, there wasn't.
So what we usually do on the podcast is run down the sci-fi news of the week, but we figured that this is the biggest news of the week, right? It's The Martian coming out. It's NASA announcing that they discovered flowing liquid water on Mars. So let's talk about The Martian. Let's ask Andy a whole bunch of questions about the book and the movie. Are you guys cool with that?
Yes. Works for me.
Okay. I want to just mention to our listeners, if they want to pipe in with questions for Andy, they can either make a comment on the YouTube video. You can, I believe, use the live chat on YouTube as well. Or we're also on the Kick app, K-I-K, and you search for our chat group. What am I, 1995 all over? Chat room, just use the hashtag Galactic Netcasts, and you'll find our Kick group, and you can ask Andy questions there, and we'll pass them along to him. So, question number one, Andy, are you ready?
I am ready.
Are you sitting comfortably?
That's two questions so far.
Well, the third question is, are you tired of questions?
Yeah, kind of, but it's all good.
Okay. Okay, so question number one. Given what we know about liquid water on Mars, how would you have written The Martian differently? Or would you have written The Martian differently, knowing what we know from NASA's big announcement this week?
I would have made one little change. So basically, the RSLs are recurring slope lineae, which is the these little streaks on hillsides that they identified the liquid water with. They aren't found uniformly everywhere across the planet. They're only found on very steep slopes in certain areas of the planet. So it wouldn't have affected Mark's quest to make water that much, because I could have just said, well, Acidalia Planitia is very flat. There aren't any steep slopes anywhere near him. And so there aren't any RSLs, any briny patches within range for him to take advantage of. So I wouldn't have had to rewrite the cool, you know, reducing hydrazine plot. What I would have done, however, is in his descent into Schiaparelli Crater, where he rolls the rover. Hey, spoiler, by the way, for people who haven't read the book. when he's going into Schiaparelli Crater and rolls a rover, in the book he does it because he dips a wheel into some really powdery Martian soil that's more like talc than sand, and it's just like a pothole. If I'd known then what I know now about the briny patches, I would have said there was like a briny patch just under the surface, and it just goes, and then it would be a much more natural reason for that roll to happen.
And that happened later in the story too, right? That was towards towards not the that very end, but
three quarters, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, so that he could have discovered that and actually gotten water out of that, and it wouldn't have affected the story that much, right?
Right. Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't have muddled the plot with it if he couldn't make him, if it wasn't an immediate problem solving situation. It's like there would be no point in bringing that up. It's like, okay, I've got plenty of water.
I'm yeah. Good. Yeah.
But yeah, if you had known about it before you started concepting it, would you have had them land at, you know, near these RSL lines?
No. No, I really liked the plot, the stuff where you had to make the water. So I would have arranged to make sure that he couldn't get water easily. I like that. I like that plot.
Yeah, it's kind of like what was the film with Tom Hanks and Wilson?
Castaway.
Castaway. You know, if he would have been found sooner, or you know,
yeah.
It's not right. Nearly as exciting if that would have happened. So okay.
Like, wow, you were stranded for 3 days.
Yeah.
Glad you're all right. Anyway, let's go home.
You're talking to a beach ball after 3 days? What?
Yeah.
You really got you got some issues going on there, buddy. So well, okay.
FedEx would have really like sucked away his soul if that was the case. If it only took 3 days.
3 days for him to volleyball. Yeah.
What was the whole experience working with the screenwriters, producers, and the studio on the film, Andy?
It was really great. The screenwriter was Drew Goddard, who's a veteran of the industry. He wrote Cloverfield. He directed Cabin in the Woods. He wrote a bunch of episodes of Lost and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I don't know if you've seen the new Netflix Daredevil series, but he wrote all of that. Or well, no, he didn't write all of it, but he created the show. And he wrote the first few eps. He's this really friendly guy, and he really liked the book, and so he wanted to stay true to it. And so he made a very direct adaptation, and he called me a lot while he was writing the screenplay. So I got to be included in the process, which they didn't have to do. So that was pretty cool.
Okay, so percentage-wise, what percentage do you think the movie is accurate to the book?
I'd say like 95%. I mean, it is a very faithful adaptation. If you're a fan of the book, you will not be disappointed by the movie.
Cool. That's cool. Really good news. The movie's so like 95% on Rotten Tomatoes right now, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's getting really good reviews. They did a really good job. I mean, the movie's pretty good.
All right. Hey, does somebody else want to jump in with questions? The next question on the list here? Maybe Brad or Anessa or Matt?
Sure. Andy, is there anything that you would do differently next time Hollywood comes around your door? You know, for instance, do you regret giving away the video game rights with the movie?
No, not really. I'm not interested in spending all my time. I don't know how to put it. I don't want to focus my whole life on doing stuff with The Martian. I wrote The Martian, and now I want to write other stuff. I wish that, and there's nothing I could do if I had a time machine on this front, but I wish that I had points on the front end, points on the net. So my contract has points on the back end, and I knew when I signed it that basically means zero, because the way it works is I get a percentage of profits of the film, but the way Hollywood accounting works is profits of a film are always zero. I think Avatar hasn't technically turned a profit yet. So... Like, yeah, seriously. Like, neither has The Phantom Menace. But I knew that when I was signing it, so it's not a surprise, and I've got no complaints. I'm not whining about it. But if I had some clout in the industry, like if I was now that I'm kind of known, I don't know how much clout I have, but I might take it out for a spin and try to find out. if I was a known quantity and something people were willing to kind of make some concessions during negotiations for, then I might ask for points on the net, which means you just take the total number of tickets sold times the ticket price, and then that's the net. You know, it's before any expenses.
Sure. Okay.
And then, so I would ask for a small percentage of the net, because I think The Martian's going to do real well in theaters. And so, yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Before we get any further, I want to just jump in here real quick and remind everybody about our website. It's gncasts.com. That's gncasts.com. You can find out all about this podcast and other podcasts. For example, Matt there does a couple of podcasts. He has a horror podcast called Podcast of Terror. Right, Matt?
I sure do.
And you do one with me too, right?
Yeah, the Weird World Weekly.
Weird World Weekly. We talk about paranormal stuff. It's fun.
I like the way you phrase that. You're like, you do one with me, right?
Not entirely sure.
I sometimes think Dave blacks out.
Well,
I think Dave was lobbing a softball match.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like the blackout theory. Every now and then, he just kind of blacks out. And, you know, it's like, I mean, we all do this, right? I mean, sometimes you just kind of don't remember what you did yesterday and there's a dead hooker in your living room.
Yeah, happens.
Does that happen to you guys?
Happens all the time.
That's okay, yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
I can't count on one hand how many times that's happened to me.
And what other shows do we do, Dave?
We're not done talking about hookers.
We have Adventure Party, which is hosted by you. Brad, we have the Alien Invasion, and we've got all these small little podcasts that are like, we have Daryl Johnston doing the Doctor Who reviews every week, which they're about 10 minutes long. So you can find all that out at gncasts.com. We have the subscription page. You go there, you find out how to subscribe to our podcasts, and then there's contact links, and there's a lot more. So it's all at gncasts.com. Just wanted to get that out of the way before we continue on. Grilling Andy.
Andy.
If we made specific titles for each episode, that's what this one would be called. Grilling Andy.
Grilling Andy.
Yep.
Grilling. Speaking of grilling, I know this isn't like part of the list, but when you're at home, kind of chilling, and you're gonna cook something, what's your favorite thing to cook?
I don't cook.
Oh, you don't cook? What's your favorite thing to order?
I like going out to restaurants. I guess I like a good steak.
Attaboy.
See, there you go.
Attaboy. He was eating soup before we started tonight.
No, it was yogurt.
Oh, it was yogurt. Oh, okay.
A little snack, yeah.
Okay.
So, I know. I asked the tough questions.
Yeah. Deep investigative reporting. Hey, I just want to point out that your contest winner hasn't had a chance to ask anything yet.
Yeah,
I was going
to
say.
I would really like her to do that.
Yeah, Alicia, it's your turn. You're up.
Yeah, well, I guess the second part of the question you're asking was, did they ask for any sequel rights or any right to create their own intellectual property using The Martian?
I'd have to check the contract, and it's 34 pages long, so I'm not going to do that right now.
Oh, wow.
But I think they can. I'm not sure. I think they can. I think they have at the very least right of first refusal on any sequels. Okay. And they could probably make a sequel like without me if they wanted. That's my guess. I assume they would approach me first. But honestly, I have never come up with a good idea for a sequel to The Martian. If I had, I'd be writing it right now. I mean, I love writing Watney. He's a fun character.
You know, I was going to actually, that was going to be our big question, our question period segment. Like, let's write a sequel to The Martian. And we could still do that. And we could maybe do it in a different, like, instead of like being all dramatic, we could make it into a sitcom, possibly. Maybe Mark.
Commentators.
Like
Mark goes to Mars.
He moves in with like a wacky neighbor or something like that.
Who plays disco all the time?
Yeah,
that seems appropriate.
I forgot about that part.
That doesn't seem really freaking stupid or anything.
I got a question that's not on here. Is there any like pop music played during the movie? Like I was thinking, "Life on Mars" be a perfect song.
It would have been, but that one's not in the movie. They have Starman, if you like David Bowie.
Oh, nice.
They have a few others, Hot Stuff. Yeah, they're good though. They're funny where they put the disco.
Nice.
For some reason, I blocked that whole part out. That's funny.
The disco stuff. And
yeah. I don't know.
Did you listen to a lot of disco when you were writing it?
Yeah, well, actually, I like disco. And all my friends give me for it. So.
That made it into the book.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Okay, here's a related question. Did you have an actor like Matt Damon in mind in your head when you were writing Mark Watney?
No, I just had sort of a blob of protagonist. I didn't really have a visual image of what he looked like. Like even when I finished the book, I couldn't have told you what color Mark's hair was. I guess I didn't really have a visual on him.
Because Matt Damon seems like the perfect person to play Mark Watney.
He really is, and he nailed the role, too. I mean, he absolutely perfectly got the personality, so I'm really happy.
In the first trailer that was released, when he said, "I'm going to science the shit out of this," that sold Matt Damon on being Mark Watney in my head.
Yep, that's exactly that's exactly right. And what's funny is that line is now becoming like kind of the signature line of the movie, and it's not in the book. That was a line written by Drew. Like, Drew Goddard wrote it for the screenplay. That line isn't in the book. So it's going to end up being one of those play it again, Sam things where people are like looking for the line in the book and it's not there. I wish I'd written it.
He knows the character and he knows the story really well to.
Oh, Drew does for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
He knows it backwards, yeah.
Are you going to write a movie-specific version of the book, like more?
No.
No? Okay.
No, the book is the book. There's a movie-branded cover, so they're selling a version of the book that has the movie poster as the cover.
Yeah, I noticed
but
that.
That's just marketing.
I was in Barnes & Noble about a month ago, and there was a lady that walked up to me, and she asked me, she's like, "Hey, have you read any good books lately?" I'm like, "Well, it's been a while, but The Martian by Andy Weir." Mm-hmm. And she was just going around to people and asking them what they've read and what they recommend. And so she left, ended up with like a big stack of books. And I went and I grabbed your book and I gave it to her. And it was in her pile of books that she purchased. So I'm hoping she enjoyed it. But yeah, that was my first thought because I really enjoyed the book. It was a very fun read. And I'm spreading the word.
Well, thank you.
Yes, I've been getting all of my friends to read it also.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So it's one of those go-to books. Like for the longest time, it was Ready Player One. And then
Ready Player One.
The Martian came along and it's like Ready Player One turned into The Martian. It's like
Well, when people ask me to recommend a book, I always say Ready Player One.
See, there you go.
There you go.
Did you know Ernest Cline before this year's Comic-Con? Because I know you met up with him at Comic-Con, right?
Well, Andy? I met him in person for the first time at Comic-Con. We'd spoken over email a few times. I didn't know him before. We didn't know each other before our books got successful.
Okay.
We both have the same publisher.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah. All right. So, who wants to answer or ask the next question?
Who wants to answer the next question?
Yeah.
How about we give
the next question and I can come up with an answer?
Well, how about we have Alicia do the next question as well?
Okay. Yeah, why don't we just make her do all the work?
Yeah.
I like talking. That's great. okay, so next question was, have you heard from anyone about, like Neil deGrasse Tyson, about any scientific errors in The Martian? And I'm going to say, because I've heard you talk about this a lot, except for the whole windstorm thing.
Oh, okay, yeah. So I haven't heard from anybody like Neil deGrasse Tyson. It's going to happen, though. I know. He's going to tweet about it. He's going to be like, the following errors. yes, and of course the sandstorm is inaccurate, and that was deliberate, and I guess you guys have all probably heard that yep. tale. Some other inaccuracies in the book, he has this effectively magical radiation shielding that in real life, there's nothing like it. He has this thin, flexible material that brings background radiation on the surface of Mars down to the nominal levels on the surface of Earth. And it's just like, to do that in real life would take like either 10 centimeters of water or a full meter of rock between you and the outside. And so there is no such material. So that's, it's not really an inaccuracy because I said that they had the material, but what
it's
it does is it softens the sci-fi a bit because everything else is real technology.
Yeah, it's science fiction.
Yeah, exactly.
You can make things up if you want.
I've heard people call it science faction, and I thought that was cute.
Yes.
But other than that, so just talking about the book, I also made a few math errors. I got the molarity of liquid oxygen wrong, and then everything that stemmed from that is wrong. It would have been an easy fix if I'd known it at the time. But yeah, other than that, it's like some procedural things, like some questionable improvements in technology, like. Modern day, in like right now, when an astronaut does an EVA, it takes them about 5 hours prep. like from the beginning, from when they first start prepping for their EVA and putting on their suit and stuff like that, to the time that they step out of the airlock is about 5 hours. And I, in the book, of course, he's just, you know, shoop, throw on the suit. It's like putting on a jacket in and out. Now, I think it's reasonable to say they could develop a rapid EVA system, you know, for, you know, like that.
Yeah.
So I'm comfortable with that.
Okay, so the next question.
The next one was mine, I think. It is rather technical.
Okay, why don't you go ahead, Alicia?
Challenge accepted.
Part of the book, spoiler alert, is Mark Watney is, you know, navigating his way to the Schiaparelli crater, and he uses Phobos to navigate. Mm-hmm. But actually, I read online that someone named Jared Crookston pointed out that the Mars rovers actually currently use manually set directional gyroscope and wheel odometers. And I was wondering if that was anything that you had heard about, or if so, if there's a decision not to use that, or?
Well, the current rovers go, you know, a few meters here and there, and they can update any errors in their position with just telemetry from other sources. They're tracking the rover's locations with satellites and stuff like that. And they go on the order of like a few kilometers. Well, like Opportunity's gone, I don't know what its total travel distance is, but it's like tens of kilometers maybe. And Curiosity can go, it can go many tens of kilometers over its life. Mark traveled 3,200 kilometers. Yeah. So if you tried to do all that with internal gyros and odometers, you would have this constantly increasing error, and you wouldn't have any idea where you were.
Okay. Oh, that's a good answer. I was wondering, did you have access to the documentation for the rovers, and what sorts of documentation and stuff did you use to prepare and figure out all this stuff?
For like Pathfinder and stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because, of course, the rover Mark has is fictional.
Right, of course.
Pathfinder, I just went online and found it. I mean, everything's out there. Okay. There's nothing like secret about these probes. Right. You can look everything up. And so I went online, like, even looked up the OS and the chipset it runs on. I went way down the rabbit hole.
Wow.
On it.
Oh, wow.
Holy crap.
It's all there. Just Google it.
Alicia, is this next question yours as well?
Yeah, it is. I was wondering, Andy, if you had also heard about the 2009 probe apparently found like high concentrations of, I don't know if I'm saying this chemical correctly, but perchlorate. Yeah, and apparently this is basically toxic to humans in high dosages because it kills thyroid functioning and stuff. And I was wondering if you think, you know, Mark's whole mixing in his own, you know, waste and earth soil. If that were... Yeah, exactly.
Boopage. So a couple of things. Curiosity found a bunch of perchlorates, and so I didn't know about, how do I put it? I didn't have this information when I wrote the book, so this is all like ex post facto kind of stuff.
Right.
Perchlorates can be cleaned out of soil with just a lot of water, and he could have just made more water, arguably. Yeah. The other thing is, if I get to go back in time and fix the perchlorate issue, that means I also get to take all the knowledge with me that I got along with the perchlorates, which means that I would also get to know that the other thing Curiosity found, which is that every cubic meter of Martian soil has about 35 liters of water in it and trapped in the form of ice. Yeah. So Mark didn't have to do the hydrazine thing at all. He could have just scooped up a bunch of soil, baked the water out of it, and then gotten rid of the soil, and that he could get as much water as he wanted, and then he would take a small amount of soil and clean the crap out of it to clean the perchlorates out. Sure. That having been said, I'm getting conflicting reports from different scientists on exactly what effect perchlorates would have.
Yeah.
Some people say that plants won't grow in them at all. Other people say plants would grow in them, but the plants themselves would become toxic. And then other people still say, yes, the plants would grow, and yes, the plants would be toxic, but not as bad for you as starving to death. So it'd be kind of like...
Good news, bad news.
It's kind of like, I mean, alcohol is toxic. Smoking is bad for you, too. There's a bunch of things you could do that don't instantly kill you, but they're bad for you. So it'd be... I'm getting conflicting reports on that. The other thing you mentioned was farming in his own shit. There's actually nothing wrong with that, however gross it may sound. Human settlements have done that in the real world, in the past, in the ancient world, because it's a source of manure.
Oh, no, I said, and they still do in some places.
In some places, they still do. The problem is, if you take a bunch of, if you take a village or something, you've got like 150 humans or some medieval-sized village, and you take all their poop and make fertilizer out of it and fertilize your crops with it, now what you've done is you've caused all of your village to be exposed to all of the pathogens that everyone in your village has, because the pathogens leave. And so it becomes a real problem for contagions and stuff. Whereas cow poop and other things like that have diseases and pathogens that affect cows and rarely cross the species barrier. So that's why we generally don't use human waste as fertilizer and will use anything else's. In Mark's case, he didn't have that problem because there's just him. Any pathogens in his crap are pathogens that were already in his body, so he's completely unaffected.
Yeah.
Interesting. Cool. Let's move on to the next question. What do you think of the Mars One mission? Do you think they can pull it off? Would you want to go if you had the chance to come back in a couple of years?
So I don't take Mars One seriously at all. Well, yay for the Netherlands, but I don't think Mars One is something they should be proud of. The Netherlands has so much more to be proud of.
No, it's not something that the Dutch are shouting from the rooftops.
Yes. So Mars One is just sort of this. I don't understand why anyone takes them seriously. They have about $400,000 worth of funding, which is not enough money to colonize Nebraska, let alone Mars. And they expect to get something like $36 billion worth of funding through effectively a reality TV show. Now, to give you an idea of how much money TV shows make, the largest revenues that exist anywhere in television are the Summer Olympics. Every 4 years, the Summer Olympics generates the largest density of revenue. And worldwide, it generates about $4 billion every Summer Olympics. So they expect to get almost 10 times the total revenue of the total global revenue of this Summer Olympics from a reality TV show. Yeah. I'm not seeing it. So I don't think they're going to do anything. And I also think that the people who sign up for the one-way trip are not really taking it seriously. It's easy to fill out a web form and send $100 in. And also, if you read any article about it, their pairing process of pairing things down, Mars One, the organization, was almost entirely focused on how photogenic the people were and their ability to get Mars One into the media. Wow. It's just... yeah. No, your voice is comforting, remember?
no one cares about me.
Anyway, anyway, so I do think that they serve a valuable purpose as a think tank where they can sit around and kind of... put a lot of thought and effort into potential
habitats
and stuff like that. But I don't think there's any chance at all that they're going to go. And I don't understand why people do. So, imagine you have a 10-year-old son and you come home and he's hanging out in the living room with his buddies and they're taping cardboard together. And you say, hey, what are you doing? And they say, oh, we're making a rocket and we're going to go to Mars. Do you subject their plans to MIT analysis, or do you just say, have fun, sweetie?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way I see it.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, that is a great analogy.
All right, before we get into any more questions, I want to thank a couple of people. We're usually, every episode we stream on Alpha Geek Radio, and we want to thank Todd Whitehead for that, but we're also this week on diamondclub.tv, and we want to thank Beatmaster for setting that up. It's the same channel that shows like Night Attack, Chord Killers, and a couple other shows are on, and it's cool to be on the same network that Brian Brushwood has his shows, so pretty psyched about that. Not as exciting as having Andy Weir on the show, but exciting.
Priorities.
By the way, Brian Brushwood, huge fan of yours, Andy.
Oh, good.
So if you ever hear from a person by the name of Brian Brushwood, you'll know why, because he's a huge fan.
Okay.
And if you get the chance to talk to him, he's a hoot to talk
yeah,
to.
Yeah, he
very,
is.
Very, very,
a hoot.
Very funny.
A hoot, you say?
A
absolutely.
Hoot and a holler.
He's a hoot.
Okay, what do you think of, or no, have your sights set on fictionalizing, colonizing any other planets in our solar system, Andy?
Yes, I had it. Well, not planets, technically. I had a whole story in mind for a moon colony, a lunar colony, and it was going to be another hard sci-fi story, kind of like The Martian, in that all the science would be real and based on stuff we have right now. But it takes place a little further in the future and not in the same universe as The Martian, but where there's a civilian, like, there's a city on the moon. And but it's only about, like, 40 or 50 years into the future. And I had a lot of fun designing the city and how it works and how to build it up from scratch and just all the details of it. And I pitched that originally to the publisher, and the publisher's like, "Nah, we don't like it."
Aww.
So... yeah, and they love the setting, but they don't like the story that I had in mind. So they said, just put it in a back burner in your mind, and someday you'll have a shower epiphany, and you'll have a good idea for a story to take place in this setting, and then we can talk about a book there. So I'm working on a different book now, my soft sci-fi one. And yes, I did put a lot of thought into how to colonize the moon.
What's the soft sci-fi one that you're working on?
Right now I'm working on a book tentatively titled Zhek, Z-H-E-K, and it's got aliens and faster than light travel and stuff
Ooh.
Like that. But done my own way. So the only thing that violates real world physics, everything in the book is based on real physics, except for this little kernel of physics I made up that allows faster than light travel. But I spent weeks carefully putting together those physical laws such that they're not in conflict with any real physics. And you can't, like, violate conservation of energy, conservation of momentum, can't violate the uncertainty principle, can't break causality with them, that sort of thing. And so I carefully said, okay, here's how you go faster than light, and that's going to be how that works. And everything, they're internally consistent, and then everything else is based on real stuff.
Well, I mean, like Star Trek, they have their own laws of physics that don't really break too many, right? I mean,
well, if I really subjected mine to deep, deep analysis.
Okay, okay.
Well, doesn't Star Trek break the laws of physics every time they land on a planet and can just breathe? And
yeah, well, that's they're breaking the laws of kind of probability.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
But actually, within the Star Trek universe, a lot of that's explained, too.
Yeah, that's true.
That, like, all of the, you know, alien, so-called alien races were all actually, you know, within the Star Trek canon, were all distantly related to a single precursor progenitor race.
Here's a quest. That's kind of like Stargate. Stargate's sort of the same way.
Well, Stargate, everybody's actually humans.
Yeah, yeah. Except for the...
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
Them and the ones that look like the most alien, and then Stargate Atlantis had the other crazy race. I forget what they're called.
Yeah, I never watched Atlantis.
Yeah, it's good. It's very good.
Okay.
All right. Hey, speaking of that, I got a question just off the cuff. Are you more of a Star Trek or Star Wars person?
I'm a Doctor Who person.
Ooh.
Oh,
excellent.
Damn right.
Didn't see that coming.
Ah.
Did you guys hear there's going to be a Doctor Who spinoff? I read that tonight.
Oh, is there?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's called The Class.
I'm going to need to hear about that.
Well, Anessa, do you have the details?
Not in front of me. It made me think of the Sarah Jane Chronicles and that they're going to have, Patrick Ness, who's a young adult author, and he's going to be... have a hand in the show, and so you're going to have kids dealing with aliens, and so that was the first thing that popped in my head.
Young adult oriented. Boo!
Yeah, apparently they...
Well, I mean, Doctor Who did start out as a kids show, and I have... one of
63 times have changed.
That's true. That's very true. And in Doctor Who related news, and Brad and Matt were with me last week, Matt stopped by and we were going to have dinner together. We had dinner together, but at the point in the story, like, we were going to have dinner together and I was the first one there, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm bored. And then I managed to spill my coffee on me, so I'm like, okay, I'm going to take a walk.
You were like, I'm bored.
He hasn't arrived yet. Oh. And so I was walking around the square and up and down the street, and there was a guy dressed as David Tennant, like the 10th Doctor, and he had like the pinstripe suit and the shoes and the hair especially. And I tried to like chase him down, but then he went into a shop and I didn't see which one, so I lost him. And then Matt showed up with his friend, and he's like, where are you? And I'm like, I'm chasing down Doctor Who. And so I get back to the restaurant. We're standing there chit-chatting, and we're waiting on Brad to arrive. And Brad shows up, like, right when the Doctor appears with an ice cream cone. I'm like, it's the Doctor!
I'm like, oh my God, did you see that guy?
So I was just so happy. It was just a random thing to see, and it made my
Sounds
day.
Great.
Matt, did your eyes roll? Did your eyes roll when Anessa mentioned Doctor Who, Doctor?
So before we got to the restaurant, we saw a different guy wearing a Doctor Who shirt, and I explained to the guy I was with, I was like, oh, these people love Doctor Who, and I absolutely hate that show. And then someone shows up wearing a Doctor Who, and I'm like, get me the hell out of here. I said, never coming back to Wausau again.
What?
So you hate Doctor Who. So I can just click ignore from the pop-up menu?
Yes.
Is that how that, I'm just trying to figure out.
Way to piss off our guest there,
Yeah,
Matt.
Way to go, Matthew.
But that's my Doctor Who related story of recent.
All right.
I don't get the allure to Doctor Who, but I'm also not really into sci-fi.
Fair enough.
I was in Wausau to see the band Cattle Decapitation. I mean, you really think I like watching Wausau? All right.
You never know. I'm sure there were people at the Cattle Decapitation show that like Doctor Who.
It takes all kinds, Matt.
Very, very partied out. I don't think he likes
so
Doctor.
Isn't this the Sci-Fi Geeks Club podcast? Isn't that?
I'm here because Dave has a soft spot in his heart for me.
Yeah.
He's
a charity
case.
I'm
only here so I don't get fined.
Matt is our equal opportunity employer.
Yes. Hire. He's your token non-geek, token...
Yes.
Your token normal.
Yeah.
Use your words wisely, this queer.
Filthy casual.
He brings us back to back to Earth when we get
He's
too crazy.
He's the grounding force of the show.
Yeah.
The
grounding force of the show.
If we were to equate the amount of sci-fi I ingest in drugs, I'm on marijuana and they're on heroin.
Yeah. And I guess I'm a dealer.
Fair enough.
I was just wondering, yeah, you've written a few things. I've heard you say that the book you wrote in college was terrible. But,
oh, yeah.
But so you've had two stories that have majorly gone viral, The Egg and The Martian. What do you think it is about those two compared to your other work that people really responded to?
bite me? No, I don't know. I think probably both of them are very optimistic. Like, they both have a very optimistic view of the world. Like, The Egg is a very kind of positive view of how the world, like, you know, it's a fictional, but it's like, it's a pleasant alternate reality, you know, to imagine yourself in. And The Martian is a very optimistic view on humanity. So maybe people just like seeing something that isn't god-awful cynical, which seems to be what fiction has become lately.
Yeah,
so maybe it has a novelty. Yeah.
There's a lot of dark, dystopian, the world's going to suck in 20 years kind of fiction out there.
Yeah, and I find that annoying. It's always, it seems to be like that's it. It's like, it's hard to find science fiction that is neither dystopian nor, how to put it? It always tends to be either dystopian or just fantasy with a sci-fi glaze.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I'm sorry, I love Star Wars. I love the originals, you know, and I'm gonna be right there. I'm gonna be first in line. Actually, I'm gonna try to shamelessly use my connections at the studio to get to pre-screenings of Force Awakens, right? So don't get me wrong, I love Star Wars, but Star Wars is not a science fiction story.
No, it's fantasy.
Star Wars is fantasy. They are knights fighting with swords. Okay.
And they gauge distances by parsecs. Or no, speeds by parsecs.
Velocity by parsecs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that was explained in the Extended Universe.
Which has been scrapped, right? So
Well, that's one thing I saw. It was in It was in an AMA I was doing, and somebody said, like, well, the EU has been destroyed. And I, like, immediately thought, no, Europe, no! Oh, God, Europe, what happened?
Actually, I see a question regarding the AMA in here, and I am curious about this because I've read through a few AMAs, but what is it like to get blasted with questions?
Kind of like what we're doing now?
I'm used to it. I mean, I always just, you know, kind of have a time limit, and that's where I stop, and I try to answer them in the order they were asked, and I just plug along. I can type pretty fast, and I don't have to put too much thought into the answers, usually.
Yeah, I saw it after the fact, so I didn't get to tell you that I love you over the internet.
Okay, but, well, thank you.
Yeah, right. That's my question. Because okay. I play games and stuff on Reddit, and, like, for 24 hours, I am the shit on Reddit.
Yeah.
I feel like it's probably the same concept for doing an AMA.
Yeah. It's just answering a ton of questions. It's a deluge. I'm about like 10 minutes into my 15 minutes of fame right now. Things will calm down once the movie leaves theaters, and then people will be like, Andy who, which will be great because then I can just go back to my cave and continue writing.
Okay.
See, there should be a spinoff show, Andy who.
Andy who. Not to be confused with Doctor Who. So then my character's name is just The Andy?
Yeah, yes. Yes.
It's The Andy.
Hello, I'm The Andy.
What would you... Okay, if you were The Andy, if that was a character, what would you travel in? Because the Doctor's got the police...
TARDIS.
Yeah, the TARDIS. What would you travel in?
Well, if it's a spinoff of Doctor Who, I would have a TARDIS of my own, just like the Master, the Ronnie, and any number of other Time Lords, all the way back to the Meddling Monk. And if I had a TARDIS, my chameleon circuit would be functional, and it would blend into the environment like it's supposed to. So there.
Wow.
I was going to ask if it would have a broken circuit or one that worked.
We've been schooled.
Everybody else's chameleon circuit works.
But suppose it were broken. Where do you think it would get stuck?
How about a porta potty?
Yeah, yes, that's so American.
Nice.
That's so American too.
Yeah. Porta potty, or maybe a refrigerator. That's even more American, right?
There we go.
Hey, here's another Doctor Who question. Why is Peter Davidson your favorite Doctor?
I think you tend to imprint on the Doctor you started with, and he was the Doctor when I first started watching the show back in the early '80s.
Have you seen...
I started with Dr. Nine, so I can say that's not true.
Okay, so yeah, I didn't like Eccleston much either. I mean, I like Christopher Eccleston as an actor, but I didn't like the idea of them trying to make the Doctor dark and edgy. No. He's just not like that.
Really liked Christopher Eccleston as the Doctor, and he was my Doctor.
He was very...
Yeah, like the goofier, the better.
Everybody liked Tennant, right?
I mean, he kind of had his own goofiness, but yeah, he had more of the dark brooding, I'm angry about what has happened.
Yeah.
And then Tennant came along, and it took me several episodes before I even warmed up to the guy, and everybody's like, oh my god, he's the best Doctor ever, and I'm like...
He was awesome. I mean, Tennant's my second favorite after Peter Davison.
So, but I really enjoyed Tennant once he grew on me, and I enjoyed Matt Smith, and I'm enjoying Peter Capaldi.
I like the actor. I think Peter Capaldi is doing a great job. And grumpy, angry, grumpy little Doctor works. I mean, because the first Doctor was a grumpy old man kind of guy.
Yes.
So that paradigm definitely works. But I have been underwhelmed by the writing in the first season of Capaldi. I think there were like one or two pretty good episodes and then a lot of just painful.
My issue with the first season with Capaldi is that the focus wasn't on the Doctor. It was more on
Clara.
And that really bothered me.
Well, I didn't even mind it focusing on Clara because the companions are kind of the companions are really the main character of Doctor Who because the Doctor is inscrutable and complicated, so you end up identifying with the companion because you're dumb compared to the Doctor too. So I don't have a problem with it following Clara around. I just didn't give a crap about half of the subplots. I'm like, I don't care about her relationship with Mr. Pink. I don't care about her career at the school. I don't care about any of that.
I don't know. I just feel like more than, you know, like previous incarnations, like right off the bat, they kind of focused a little bit more on the Doctor and his regeneration and the changes that he's gone through. So, you know, Matt Smith really liked fish sticks and custard, and then you had David Tennant running around in his PJs. But I mean,
there was still a little more of a focus on the Doctor, but whenever Capaldi came along, it just seemed like they're like, oh, hey, here's the Doctor and Clara.
Yeah.
Like, more so. So I would have liked to seen a little bit more of the focus, maybe not all of it, but I would have liked him to shine a bit more than
so. So far this season, the two episodes have been amazing, and I think they. Yeah,
I've only seen the first one, and now I'm blanking on it. What happened in that first?
Oh, with Davros.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I was into that, and it left it a cliffhanger, and I haven't seen the second one yet.
It's so good. It's really, really good.
I'll see that when it comes out.
The first here. 5 minutes particularly are awesome. It's
no spoilers, no spoilars.
All right.
So Clara's
meanwhile, Matt has just muted his microphone and is dying inside. Like,
he's dying inside.
You know how used to this I am?
Alicia, you had a question, a follow-up?
So Clara's leaving. So there's going to be a new companion. If you could bring back one prior companion, who would it be?
Romana.
Yeah?
She's always been my favorite companion. She's awesome. It's like, she can make a time machine. From scratch. She did it once. And she's a Time Lord. She regenerates and stuff. She's awesome. I love Romana. Yeah. I wrote fanfics about Romana. They're on my website.
Wow. Okay. Well, what do you think about...
Not the bad kind of...
Not the bad kind of fanfic.
Like the cool kind where she's, fighting bad aliens and stuff.
What do you think about the idea of bringing back Susan Foreman to the show?
That'd be cool. Is that something they're talking about?
Well, there's been the rumors going around that What's-Her-Face from Game of Thrones is supposed to be Susan, but I think that's been...
Like Cersei or what?
No, then Arya character, what's her name?
Oh, Arya? Maisie Williams?
Yeah. It was supposed...
That would be awesome.
That was a rumor, but I think it's been refuted since...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be pretty cool if, Susan Foreman, I always liked her as a character, too.
Yeah. And she was, she was a Time Lord, right? I mean, she was.
It gets a little muddled. You can argue that she's a Gallifreyan.
Yes.
She's certainly not a Time Lord.
Okay.
A Gallifreyan, so she's the same species as the Doctor, but she doesn't have all the augmentation and stuff that a Time Lord has. Like, for instance, she would have two hearts, but she wouldn't regenerate.
Okay. All right. So that would make her, she would be really old if she were to come back on the show.
That'd be cool. Yeah, and it's never been clear if she's actually his biological granddaughter or if she's like, you know, just like
adopted
or if that's just an affectionate title she calls him.
All right. Yeah. Question, non-Doctor Who related question. What are the sci-fi books, TV shows, movies that you've enjoyed most recently, Andy?
Most recently?
Yeah.
Well, number one's got to be Ready Player One by Ernest Cline.
Yeah.
I also quite liked The Fold by Peter Kling.
I just got done reading that. It's awesome. Yeah. It's really, really good. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. And right now I'm reading, well, it's more fantasy, but The Bone Clocks, and I'm only a little bit into it, so I don't know. I mean, I'm enjoying it, but I'm also not getting a lot of time to read lately, so. So those are recent sci-fi. Now, if you want to know my all-time favorite sci-fis, it'd be like, I like Tunnel in the Sky by Heinlein. I like that one a lot. Half Spacesuit Will Travel. And I love the Caves of Steel saga, just the robots saga. By Asimov. I liked Rama by Arthur Clarke.
Yeah, that's a good story. That's a very good story. Yep. All right, let's move on to a few questions that we got from our Facebook group. I'm going to start with JF Dubow, who's, by the way, an author, and he really wanted to be on this episode. he wrote a couple of books. One's called The Life Engineered, and the other is called A God in the Shed. I just wanted to plug those for him since he couldn't be on.
Duly plugged. The Life Engineer and the God in the Shed?
Yes, sir.
God in the Shed.
The story of the Martian seems like a one-off tale. However, now that the book is a movie and knowing how hungry for franchises Hollywood... And I think we kind of covered this already, touched on this a little bit.
So there are... I mean, if you put a gun to my head and made me write a sequel, there are a few possible directions to go, but I just didn't like any of them enough, you know. One of them is in the book they leave off like in Mars orbit, so there's still the whole trip back to Earth to cover.
Oh yeah.
And things could go wrong on the ship and stuff like that, but it's less interesting because instead of being by himself, he's with five crewmates, and instead of being somewhere cool like Mars, they're just out in space. And instead of being isolated, there's just no way Hermes would get cut off from NASA, right?
Well, just kill them all off right away.
Kill them all off. Yeah. The other thing is it retroactively makes the ending of The Martian, it retroactively removes the catharsis at the end of The Martian. Because as a reader, you read The Martian and you're like, and finally he's safe. And then if you plow into the next book and it's like, he's not safe, haha, then it just kind of like, it lessens the impact of the first book. Yeah. Another option is that there's a different space problem, like a serious problem, like 10 or 15 years later. So a reasonable length of time and a reasonable likelihood of another problem. But he's on the ground this time. He's trying to help the people who are in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little less interesting because people like having Mark in trouble, not just randoms that Mark is helping. And then finally, another one is that there's some serious problem in space and they send Mark to fix it.
See, I think that one would be the most interesting of the three.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He was a problem on the moon colony.
Yes. There you go.
Well, I did. I considered that for a while, is that the lunar colony and Watney being the same genre or setting or whatever. But my lunar colony requires a bunch of kind of it has to be further in the future than Watney can be.
Well, make him 20 years older, yeah. You know, and...
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd have to make him, like, 50 years older.
Yeah.
To be, like, old man Watney.
Well, you know, Hollywood loves franchises.
That's true.
Andy, so, you know...
I tell you what, like, you know, there's an old thing. My hat is for sale, right? If somebody came up and offered me $10,000 for this hat, I'd be like, there you go. So if they come up to me with a dump truck full of enough money, I'd be happy to write a sequel. I mean, I could stop. My integrity has a price.
Matt, you have a question for Andy.
I do.
Yeah.
Does Mark Watney wear boxers or briefs?
I'm guessing boxers.
Yeah, he seems like a boxer kind of guy.
Seems like he's pretty casual.
Yeah.
He might be like a boxer brief kind of guy. Like, he likes to party.
Don't complicate.
No.
Too loose.
No, not a boxer brief kind of guy.
The boxer briefs are like the mullet of the underwear, right?
Yeah, they're the worst of both worlds.
What?
That is my new favorite quote now. I want a t-shirt made of that.
So boxer briefs are favored by men who are out of touch and lesbians.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Wow, I used to wear them when I worked out. Are you calling me a lesbian or a man?
Do you prefer sex with women to sex with men?
Yes.
Hey, as a woman on the panel, I'll weigh in. Boxer briefs are the mullets in like the 80s when it was actually cool and sexy.
Oh, when it was cool.
Yeah, no, it's the
but
best of both worlds.
They will stop being cool soon.
It's
possible.
It's
yeah,
the best of both worlds. I mean, it's a brief and it's a boxer.
It's the worst of both worlds. It's like no room for the boys, but also
I wore them when I worked out so that the boys don't bounce around.
Okay,
exactly.
Well, I see. Yeah, I don't.
Well, see, that would make sense if you only, you know, you have a specific purpose for the boxer briefs.
Yes.
So
yeah.
If you're like, okay, I am going to wear boxer briefs at this designated time. Once I'm done, I'm moving back to boxers.
Moving back to real underwear.
Yes, I generally wear boxers, and only now I've gotten rid of. I got sick of wearing the boxer briefs because they're uncomfortable.
Yes.
And I work.
Because you're boys.
When I work out.
I happen to like boxer briefs. They're very comfortable.
Ooh, say sorry, Andy. You've offended Dave.
Well,
you're never.
I'm sure in time with therapy, he'll get past this hurdle.
That's it, Andy. You're never coming on the podcast ever again.
Oh. I'll start my own podcast and invite Andy.
With I'll make my own podcast with like blackjack and hookers.
Well, I guess my next question, Andy, are you a gamer?
I am not a video gamer. Believe it or not, I don't match that archetype, but I am a board gamer.
Board games.
See,
there
behind me, that bookshelf is completely full of board games.
Excellent.
And what's your favorite?
That'll change. Like, if you ask me my favorite board game any given week, I'll give you a different answer. Right now, I'm enjoying a lot. What do I like to play lately? I like to play Splendor a lot lately. Splendor. That's a good one. I like Soul Keen. It's another one. I don't know. I could just start throwing out random words, and you guys would probably believe they're board games.
Well, Brad actually does a podcast about board gaming, so
cool.
Yeah.
So, how about you, Brad? What do you play?
Gosh, right now.
What's the most recent thing you played? How's that?
Sentinels of the Multiverse, but that's a card game.
Yeah, I played it. And it's co-op.
Yes.
Yep.
I like co-op a lot. Actually, you know what?
It's actually a lot of fun.
Hanabi. I've been playing a ton of Hanabi lately. I don't know if you guys know that.
No.
I definitely recommend it.
I was buying it the other day, but I didn't.
It's my favorite co-op game.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Also, Through the Desert's another really good co-op. Not Through the Desert. Forbidden Desert.
Forbidden Desert. I haven't played Forbidden. No, I do have. I have Forbidden Island. That's what I have.
Yeah. So Forbidden Desert is the game, the same people as Forbidden Island, but Forbidden Island has some annoying rules and some kind of like. It's like Forbidden. Once you play Forbidden Desert, you'll be like, "Oh, there's no further need to play Forbidden Island."
Why am I playing the island? Yeah.
What about Forbidden Desert Island?
Yeah, my friends and I were trying to come up with a hybrid game using both sets called Forbidden Desert Island, but we couldn't come up. We did have a fun time mixing. We like to hybridize games, so we used back in the 90s. We played Magic and Monopoly together. We call it Majopoly. And so you made your magic deck, but you weren't allowed to put any lands in there. And then you'd have to buy territory on the Monopoly board, and then you'd like tap your properties for mana. And so you're like, I tap Ventnor Avenue to get one green mana and stuff like that.
That's funny.
We also hybridized Settlers of Catan and Shogun, which is now called Samurai Swords, but it's kind of like Axis and Allies, but it takes place in feudal Japan kind of thing. And so we mixed Settlers of Catan and Samurai Swords so you could build settlements and roads and stuff and then conquer each other's stuff. And we called it Settlers of Japan.
That's perfect.
Yep. So we hybridized stuff, but we weren't able to come up with something that worked with Forbidden Desert and Forbidden Island.
That's too bad.
Maybe you could mix in like some Ninja Burger. So you have to also deliver hamburgers? Have you played Ninja Burger?
You randomly just say, like, I'm going to look at my shelf, and I'm going to see...
I was looking, and I saw Ninja Burger. And I'm like, well, what if you're stuck in a desert, but you also work for a burger joint?
Deliver... What if you're stuck in a desert and checkers?
All right. We have one more official question for you. It's from Daryl Johnston, our official UK representative. He does a Doctor Who podcast for us every week.
Good man.
And it kind of relates to games, right, Brad? I mean, this question baffles me. I don't know what it means. Do you want to ask it? It's Daryl Johnston.
If playing the escape from style games contribute.
Oh, I know what he's talking about. There's those games where it's like escape from the room.
Yeah. And
it's
Forbidden Island and Forbidden. I know what you're talking about. You're talking about the IRL games where you're actually there in a room and like there's a screwdriver hidden somewhere in the chair.
That's my assumption.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yep.
And what about him?
He's asking if.
Has anybody applied the Watney experience?
Nope. I haven't heard of anything like that.
That'd be fun.
That'd be rough. They'd have to drive you out in the desert and leave you there. They will be back in 4 years. Let's see if you're alive.
Good luck.
We'll see
Good
you luck.
I need to put. I'm gonna have to put a disclaimer at the beginning of this episode. You guys are swear word crazy here. The F word, the S word.
Oh no! The L word.
Yeah. All right. Hey, before we
lycanthrope,
lesbian. I said lesbian earlier.
Oh, I was wondering
and
what that meant.
The L word is a TV show. Oh my god! It was such a good joke. You people.
We're slow.
I've never actually watched the L word. So.
I've watched it.
We're uncultured.
We also don't have cable.
Okay. I would love to get some listener feedback from this episode. So anybody listening, we have an email address you can write to, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, or call our voicemail number, which is 805-328-3966. All right, big question time. You guys ready for this?
Should we have Alicia ask it?
Wait.
Yeah, we could.
Oh,
well, okay. I guess we're officially ready for the big question. Alicia, do you want to do the honors of asking the big question?
Sure. So The big question is, how do we think Mars will factor into science fiction storytelling in the future, especially given what we now know about liquid water on the surface? And actually, I have kind of a follow-up question, but we'll start with this.
Okay. Okay. Well, my opinion is you can expect to see references to liquid water in all science fiction related to Mars from now on. I think you can expect people will mention that. How do I figure Mars will feature into sci-fi in general? I think Mars will continue to be intensely interesting to readers for so long as we haven't visited it.
Oh.
It's the next big hill that we have to climb as a species, and so everyone's really interested in it. I mean, we are way more interested. The general public is way more interested in Mars than they are any other part of our solar system. So I think we're going to be really, really focused on it, especially as we send more probes and keep learning new stuff. People don't really realize how rapidly we're getting new information about Mars. We think of it as being like kind of like geology, where it's like, well, we haven't really learned much in the last, 100 years or so. They've pretty much figured it all out. But Mars is like, in the time since I released The Martian, they've discovered huge amounts of water. They've discovered perchlorates. They've discovered liquid, briny water flows. It's just like, shoot, go back in time to the 60s, when the first Mariner probe got there. We didn't even know that it had craters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
I have a related question to that. What happens if we discover life, like just microbial life on Mars? Does that affect the way that we develop the planet, way that we explore the planet?
Then what you get is effectively environmentalism, on Mars. It extends to Mars life.
Apparently they're already worried about that.
Yeah, and I'm kind of irritated by them. There's Planetary Protection. So Planetary Protection is a group it's not a group. It's just a set of rules that NASA follows, and there are a lot of scientists who are very pro-planetary protection, and others are less so. That basically make the argument, well, Mars might have an ecosphere. It may have life, and we just haven't discovered it yet. If so, we want to make sure not to infect Mars with Earth life, which might be like an invasive species that might just end up basically ruining the ecosphere of Mars if it exists. So they have to sterilize every probe they send to Mars. They subject it to very high temperatures to try to kill anything that's trying to hitch a ride. And that's the idea. Now the reason, I see why they're doing it, but now there are these briny water flows. If there's life anywhere on Mars, we will find it in those water flows. One of those water flows is 50 kilometers away from Curiosity, so we could literally send an asset we have on Mars right now to go look at it. And the Planetary Protection folks are saying no, don't do it. Now, because they're worried that Curiosity will have some bacteria on it or something like that, which could come in contact with the liquid water and then start breeding, and then we've infected Mars. Now, I think they're...
I also read that another concern was that there might be like a false positive if, they're like, oh, we found bacteria, and then it's like, oh, actually, that's ours.
Well, let's go take a look. And then we can figure out if we get a false positive. Yeah. Get the data, right? I mean, the probe's name is Curiosity. Now, what bothers me about Planetary Protection is it's kind of on-again, off-again logic. Okay, if we are concerned that if Earth life is just a death sentence to Mars's ecosphere, then the damage is already done, because humanity has already sent over a dozen probes to the surface, some of them not so clean. Some of the early ones that, landed in the 70s, like Viking, it was somewhat sterilized, but not perfectly clean. And the Soviets have sent probes as well, and I don't know how much effort they put into it. So if the argument is, any Earth life gets to Mars, that's it, Mars is doomed, then it's already doomed. Now, if you make a different argument and you say like, well, no, it'll be like an invasive species, and so it could be like, oh, well, this area is afflicted, this area over here is affected, but it's not the whole planet, then I say, fine, then go ahead and check out the briny water flow, because the worst we can do is ruin the little local ecosystem of that one briny water flow rather than ruining the whole planet. So you see, all avenues lead to, let's go check it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so, Mars has been infecting Earth for a long time, so,
There's the other thing. We've been exchanging material for 4.5 billion years.
Yeah.
Serves us right.
I was wondering if you guys bought into the whole panspermia idea, that perhaps...
Oh.
It's possible.
Oh.
The idea that Earth and Mars may have life that's related to each other because some little microbe astronauts may have come from Mars or to Mars via asteroid impacts and whatnot. It's an interesting concept. And what's interesting is, although it's extremely unlikely that anything could be knocked off of Earth, survive the trip to Mars, and then infect Mars, or vice versa, it's extremely unlikely. It is less likely for a planet to develop life on its own. So the idea of one of the planets infecting the other one, it actually means that Mars is more likely to have life than any other planet we know of, just because there's that thin chance that it may have been infected by Earth millions of years ago, which would be kind of an interesting concern, because if it's a descendant of Earth microbes, then it could be something dangerous to us, because the biological processes are the same. It's like DNA, and so it could actually be something that's like toxic or something like that to us, whereas if it were a truly naturally evolved organism, it would probably just not interact with our biology at all.
Interesting. Alicia, did you have you had a follow-up question, or did you already ask?
That was it, the panspermia.
Okay. Yeah, we talk about that all the time on our alien podcast.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It's a common subject.
So you're
subject
talking about
up.
More than just like our solar system. You're talking about interstellar panspermia.
Well, we cover both, right, Brad? I mean,
both.
And then I love the idea of water being all over our solar system now. It's like every place we look, it's just full of water now, it seems.
Yeah, Europa, Enceladus, Mars, finding it everywhere. Well, it's relevant is liquid water.
Yeah. All right, so that's your big question. I know that I put down as my recommendation this week The Martian, the book. Does anybody else want to throw in something that they've listened to, read, watched, or whatever, played recently?
I played the Mad Max video game.
Oh!
It got old real quick.
Really?
Oh, really? I loved the movie.
So did I. I really liked the movie.
I loved it. I thought it was excellent. Are they making more?
I'm not sure.
I believe
probably.
So. I read that, he's going to work on another one.
I hope so. Man, that was awesome.
I think he's gonna do two more, do another trilogy, I believe.
That'd be sweet.
And he might be doing one of the DC movies too.
Oh, cool. Well, I love the wasteland in Mad Max, because if you look at all now four movies, it actually has a described and functional economy. Like the economics of the wasteland are real. There's Gas Town. They provide like oil and gas. There's the Bullet Farm, which is a lead mine that actually makes bullets, and they use potassium nitrate and stuff like that to make gunpowder for them. Then there's like the Citadel, which provide water, and so all these different factions own different critical resources, and there's trade. And I love it. I've never seen a post-apocalyptic nightmare world with a functional economy before that actually makes sense to explain how these people keep getting bullets and gas and stuff.
They're so organized.
Yeah, it's great.
The economics of things in fiction is really interesting. There's somebody that I listened to another podcast called Major Spoilers. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. But they were talking to a guy on that podcast, and he writes books like the economics of Star Wars, the economics of Star Trek. It's just interesting to kind of discuss and read more about that, because you don't really think about it when you're watching the movies or the TV shows. How does the economy work, especially Star Trek? It's like half.
It's never really explained.
Yeah.
In the early days, they tried to play it off as it's a post scarcity society, but they kind of changed their mind on that.
Yeah, DS9 kind of threw a wrench in that.
Yeah.
Anybody else have recommendations?
Jambalaya.
Mm.
Hey, I had that for dinner the other night. It was
that's tasty.
What's that?
That's good stuff.
What's okay? You're in Amsterdam, right, Alicia?
Yes.
What is there to do in Amsterdam? We know of the
bicycling, beer, marijuana.
These are true. I mean, it's the cool thing about Amsterdam is it's a major capital city, because I have to say the tourist economy supports, everything that you could want to do on any given night. But it's like this small, cozy town with less than a million people, and it looks like a movie set everywhere. So it's a really fun place. I should work for the tourism board.
Well, you know, since we're talking to you, why don't you talk about all the stuff that you have going on, all the stuff that you're writing, what you're into? Because we didn't really talk about what you have going on, Alicia.
Yeah, well, I'm a freelance writer, editor, translator by day. And then, you know, sci-fi hobbyist by night. So that's also why, you know, Andy's one of my heroes because, you know, he made it work online. And, yeah, it shows the power of just if you can make a good story. So my project that I'm working on right now is actually, it's about a cloud colony on Venus. So it's not unrelated. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Like 50 kilometers up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, NASA has actually talked about doing that.
Yeah. Well, it's cool. Tell them why.
I mean, I have to give, I can't remember the man's name, but I was first exposed to this watching a talk from, about why this would work at the Mars Society event. But it's basically, you know, Venus is very high pressure and very hot on the surface. But if you're, like 50 kilometers up, if you're in the cloud level, it happens to be that the pressure is right, that you could just float in sort of a shell.
Well, the relevant thing is the pressure, if you're 50 kilometers off the surface of Venus, the pressure is one atmosphere, and the temperature is about 40 degrees Celsius.
That's
right,
perfect.
And the gravity is also much better than Mars.
Gravity and G.
And you have, you know, protection from radiation in the atmosphere, and
what's really cool about it is you could literally be, if you're on a platform or a blimp or something like that, 50 kilometers off the surface, you could have, like, some goggles to protect your eyes, because there's sulfur in the air, and you could have a scuba gear, like a breather so you could get oxygen, and then you'd just be standing out there in shorts and a t-shirt on another frickin' planet.
Yeah, it's probably a pretty cool view.
It'd be warm, too. It'd be like kind of hottish for the Americans. It's about 105 degrees Fahrenheit, 40 degrees Celsius.
It beats being on the surface.
The problem is you're blown around the planet, and like every day would end up being 4 days long. So you'd have to figure that out, work out some artificial lighting situations there.
Well, and nitrogen would be a lifting gas in Venus's atmosphere, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, you actually would need, you know, minimal. I mean, the argument is that perhaps it would be easier to build a Venus floating habitat than a habitat on Mars, or at least easier for humans to survive there with less.
And there's got to be
premise.
There's got to be a lot of science too that you could learn from being in the orbit of Venus, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and if you could find a way to deal with the pressure, the mining on the surface would be very helpful to say the least.
Surface of Venus is hell. It's like 500 degrees Celsius, which is about 900 degrees Fahrenheit, and the atmospheric pressure is about 90 atmospheres. So it's about the same pressure as being a kilometer underwater.
So how long did it
possible to go to for short visits? So.
Yes.
didn't like the Russians land a probe and it lasted like 20 seconds or something like that, and then
it was like it was about an hour.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's all they expected.
Yeah.
But we got to see the surface, which was pretty cool.
Yep.
Alicia, do you have stuff online that people can check out, or is it just...
I mean, fiction-wise, no, in terms of my other work. For instance, one thing that I've been... a project I was working on recently was writing about... I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Blender 3D software.
No problem.
And they do films also, short films. Like Sintel and Big Buck Bunny are probably the most famous. I was writing recently about their newest film, which is called Cosmos Laundromat, and you can see that on gooseberry.blender.org, all about an absurdist story about a sheep who gets a chance to live many different lifetimes.
Sounds interesting. And you're on Twitter too, so people can follow you. What's your Twitter handle?
It's at Alicia, my first name, E-L-Y-S-A-I-C-B.
Okay. We'll put that in the show notes so people can click on that and follow you on Twitter. Before we get out of here, before we let Andy go, any final questions for Andy? Because this is maybe our last chance to talk to Andy Weir. Ever.
Well, you make it sound like
I'm like, is he dying?
Is there something you haven't told us, Andy?
I'm joining ISIS tomorrow.
Just,
like you do, you know. So, yeah.
No.
I mean, they've got some good propaganda, man.
I'm not going to be such a big shot that I. You know.
He's going to Mars. Come on, guys.
Yeah. That's never going to
happen. Mars One, yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Extra cardboard.
So I think that's it. Before we get out of here, a couple of things. A reminder of our website again, gncasts.com.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt, but I did have – there was one
Damn
question
it, Brad.
That I typed in here that I really wanted to ask.
Okay.
Andy, have you been asked to be a part of any campaigns to get kids more interested in science?
Ooh,
good
question.
Release the Martian.
All the time. I'm usually willing to do, up until my schedule got super busy, I was usually willing to do like Skypes with classrooms or personal visits if they're in the area and stuff like that. There's a, just STEM education in general, right?
Sure.
The main thing that most of them want is they want a Scholastic edition of The Martian that doesn't have all the swearing. And yeah. And I'm fine with it, but Random House doesn't want to do it. And they have some pretty good reasons, actually. They might do it when the sales fall off eventually. But the problem is, if you have two different versions of a book, then inevitably it causes chaos. Because, Barnes & Noble will order 50,000 copies of the wrong version. Or people read version A and post a review for version B. And here's the worst part. You have two different versions means those are two different sales counts for bestseller lists. So it's like basically right now the Martian's number one on the New York Times bestseller list. If it were broken up into a Scholastic and normal edition, they'd probably be like 4 and 7 or something like that. And it's like they'd much rather be on top.
Could you wait a few years and then do it? And
I suspect that once the sales fall off to like nominal levels, then they might make a Scholastic edition.
Nice.
They just don't want to poke the cobra right now. They've got a good thing going, and they don't want to mess with it.
No, that's fair enough. Okay.
Awesome.
Sorry to interrupt, Dave.
No, great question. I'm glad you asked it. What I was saying was our website, gncasts.com, is where you can find details about this show and our other podcasts on the Galactic Netcast Network. You can leave us feedback by emailing galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. You can call our voicemail number at 805-328-3966. Don't forget you can subscribe to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. We're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, or just click on the subscribe tab on the website, gncasts.com. Andy Weir, thank you very much for being our guest again for the second time here in the Sci-Fi Geeks Club.
Sure thing. And as always, sorry, Matt. We're sorry.
You know, that's going to,
bored.
It's funny because we always have, even if Matt's not here, we've got Matt at the very end of the show going, "Bye, Dad." It's a kind of an inside joke. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to capture that, what you just said, sorry, Matt, and we'll start playing that at the end of the show.
And as always, sorry, Matt.
Or whenever we start talking about Doctor Who, we'll just throw that in. Sorry, Matt.
Yeah, that'll be a sound effect.
Yes.
Andy, where can people find your stuff online or your online presence?
AndyWeirAuthor.com and Twitter handle @AndyWeirAuthor, and then I'm also on Facebook.
I'm sure that you'll be glad to have us not tweet at you 3 times a day, because that's what we were doing up until today, I think, about 3 times.
Tweet
a day.
Tweet all you want.
Okay.
Twitter all the things.
Like Donkey Kong now.
Yeah.
Well, let's not be weird about it now.
Get weird about it now. Andy Weir is going to deal with it. It's a little weird.
Alicia Brenner, thanks for being on the podcast, and thanks for contributing to the Patreon campaign as well.
And thanks for staying up all night.
Yeah.
Well, basically, this is a break in my nap time. So.
Okay. Has the sun come up yet?
No, not this time of year.
Already it's getting kind of late.
Yeah. Speaking of the Patreon, don't forget you can go to patreon.com/ Galactic Netcasts, patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. We're trying to afford a few things. It's our monthly costs of like hosting and advertising. So any little bit counts, at least a dollar a month would be awesome. So Patreon, patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. All right, that's going to do it. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, everybody. And I'm Dave Nelson on behalf of Brad, Corey, Matt, Anessa, Gregor, Mark, JF, Alicia, and Andy. We will talk to you next time, guys.
Woohoo! Bye. Bye.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you for joining us for another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Did you know you could help support this network financially for as little as a dollar a month? Come on, that's less than a cup of coffee. Support this network now at patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. If you liked what you heard, then make sure to subscribe for free on iTunes, Stitcher, or by going to gncasts.com/subscribe. And if you really enjoyed the podcast, leave us a 5-star rating and review. Even better, tell your friends and family about the Sci-Fi Geeks Club from Galactic Netcasts.
You have been listening to a production of Galactic Netcasts. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe and give us feedback, plus additional podcasts from the Galactic Network, daily news features, videos, links to our social networks, and more, go to gncasts.com. That's gncasts.com.